10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, hello, Internet. It's your boy, Brod again, and welcome to another episode of the Every Joe Podcast. Hashtag EJPC, your political safe space. Got a big show this week, as they are each and every week. And which of course, the, you know, going to cover the huge news story in politics, which is Daniel Bryan suddenly retiring from professional wrestling. I do apologize to everyone that I thought I had a Daniel Bryan t-shirt. I don't anymore. So I had to settle for CM Punk. But other than that, since I pretty much lost both my guests and half the EJPC universe, we are going to be talking about the New Hampshire primary and why everything is terrible. With... why am I looking? First of all, I'm looking at a piece of paper. I don't even have notes, and I know both these people. from the Bill of Rights Institutes.
It's one institute.
I'm a professional. This is like the 10th time we've done this. It's already gone off the rail. You know, I can't see him right now, but I guarantee you our producer's cursing at us. From the Bill of Rights Institute. Aaron, let us know when we go live. From the Bill of Rights Institute, our good friend, Whitney Neal. Good talking to you again. Hello. And from the ironically titled How Creative, and one of the brain children behind the Make America Awesome pack who to support Donald Trump, Ben Howe.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, New Hampshire.
And by the way, that's actually Make America's Awesome.
Make America's, both the all the Americas. all of the United States of the Americas.
All of them.
So, looking at New Hampshire, as we know by now, Donald Trump won, which, as according to my notes that aren't actually notes, he got 100,000 votes, which is more than Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. Marco Rubio tanked because apparently
Krispy Kreme. Did you just call him Krispy Kreme?
No, I want to make sure. I actually called him Krispy Kreme. Krispy Kreme would be funnier. But yeah, apparently Marco Rubio got shellacked because he couldn't handle getting beat up by what's his face? Oh, Chris Christie.
So even after all this time, the big fat bully is beating up on the poor Mexican kid.
Exactly. It's a total microaggression. And somewhere in the middle of all this, John Casey became a thing, and everything's terrible. Ooh. So, Whitney, ladies first. Your overall take on New Hampshire.
Oh, God. Thank you, New Hampshire. I feel like, so there's been this collective meltdown over New Hampshire, like, all day today, all over social media. And I kind of think I've calm about it. Like, I'm like, yeah, I kind of figure Donald Trump would win. Didn't really see Jeb doing as well as he did, but, you know, give or take what it is. But I actually don't think Rubio got a shellacking. I think, you know, being as close as he did coming in, like, what is it, fifth, barely fifth?
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad of a deal. And if nothing sends a message to everybody else that they better get their crap together, it's Trump winning by the margin that he did, which I think was more unsuspecting. And then the fact that, like, apparently every independent voter showed up for the Trump or Kasich that ever has voted in New Hampshire, which is a big pain in the rear. But I don't know. I'm not as worked up over it as I thought I would be.
Okay. And while Whitney had a very nice defense of the establishment there, we have Donald Trump's number one fan, Ben Howe. Ben,
yes.
Donald Trump.
Go Trump.
How excited are you?
I am so excited that I'm committing suicide later today. So, first, you know, I think it's worth noting that Ted Cruz only spent $580,000 in the entire primary process in New Hampshire and still came in third.
Oh, and also, I did forget one stat. Jeb Bush, going by his current burn rate, he will need to spend $3.5 billion to get all 1,200 delegates to win the race.
Oh, very nice. Well, he's doing really well on his cost per vote.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's disappointing that New Hampshire went the way that it did. But even before we got there, even before Iowa, we were all saying, who cares about these early ones? In fact, the only reason that I even ever was celebrating Iowa was just because I love watching Trump lose anything. And I wanted to see him cry. And I was trying to get him to cry. I don't know if I was the reason that he ended up having his meltdown. I hope I am. But seeing Ann Coulter and Laura Ingraham and all of these other shills that have been propping him up as the, you know, totally undefeatable monster of politics and then watch him get second place and cry about it and threaten to sue. Oh, totally worth it. So now they're coming to my state, South Carolina, and I don't think this one matters either.
Well, I do want to talk about the people propping up Trump for a little bit, and because I think, because Whitney mentioned about people in full meltdown mode at New Hampshire going into Iowa, and a lot of us, I think, seem to be in the same boat, because I know the three of us all started at the same time, like just after the 2008 race, which is when, like, you know, the Tea Party activism first started to pick up.
Right. And you were like, you were only 43, 44 years old.
I was only 43. You were like 87. Whitney, right. I think, was just born.
Yes.
But we all pretty much started at the same time and spent the past 8 years rallying, because not being fans of the establishment, however you describe the establishment, just, you know, not being fans, but so we spent the past 8 years rallying around people like Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and Nikki Haley and Scott Walker, Rick Perry, Bobby Jindal, and all them. And mainly because, okay, so these are going to be the guys who are going to, you know, run for president and be able to define conservatism to a broad new audience and, you know, wealth and prosperity for everyone. And to not only see Donald Trump, who's an actual rhino, taking over the race, but seeing, like, you know, like a lot of our colleagues and a lot of people who claiming to be conservative and claiming to be about liberty supporting him.
It makes me do this.
Yes.
Where exactly did the wheels fall? Like, where exactly did, where did we go wrong? Like,
I don't want to like name names, but it rhymes with mightmart.com. Okay. And this is where the problem started. Okay, we were all pissed in 2008. Everybody had different reasons. For me, it was TARP. For a lot of other people, it was the auto bailouts. Auto bailouts had a big impact on me. So we all had reasons to be pissed, but we were also unified around a specific agenda, which was fiscal. That was it. There were a lot of things that defined the right, but for the most part, it was like, let's focus on this. And then I think some special interest groups, whether they were for particular social issues or against particular social issues, they started to infiltrate the Tea Party and start to try to make it about more than that. And then it became about immigration and gay marriage and all these other things started propping in. And at some point, people who were like, actually, I really just cared about this fiscal stuff, they left. And then all that was left was this giant group of outraged freakazoids who I think are the main driving force behind Trump. I think Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter and the people who currently run what was founded by Andrew Breitbart but is now a completely different animal. I think that those groups and those people and Sean Hannity, they all worked to foster the rage of that group. Because look at the breakdown. Writers are by and large against Trump. TV and radio, by and large, for Trump. Why? He gets ratings. He doesn't get that many readers. He gets a lot of ratings, though. So, of course, they're for him. Look at CNN. They started charging 10 times as much for advertising on the debates because he's a clown. And so he turns the debate into a circus. And yes, people tune in, and that's good for business, and I get that. But they're fostering the rage of idiots.
Yeah. I think, too, like, I mean, and I worked for one of them, but we had a lot of organizations that cropped up in the beginning with a specific purpose. Like, we're going to pass this agenda. We're going to focus on these fiscal issues. And over time, they realized what we had all been saying was we want a voice. Where's our voice? Where's our people representing us? Then they realized that the voice didn't sell as much as the outrage. The outrage, like you said, makes money. And even the organizations, I sometimes feel guilty. And I'm like, did I help create this monster? Because I was there. I was traveling around the country, training people, telling them what to do. And now we are left with this because outrage sells more than actual results and success and accomplishing the agenda that we claim to support. And now it's, what thing can we get everybody maddest about today? And how can I write a book about it or go on TV and talk about it? I don't really care if we ever solve that problem. I'm just going to tell everybody why they should be mad.
Right.
But it's like one of those issues was Obamacare and the concept of socialized medicine, which the three of us have worked on together. You know, we've been to the same seminars about, you know, we've worked in different projects about to fight it. And there were people generally, like, you know, the strong activists who said that Mitt Romney was a terrible candidate because he can't run against Obamacare. And 4 years later, we're supporting a guy who not only supports socialized medicine, supported it in a Republican debate a couple months ago. I mean, this isn't one of those things where he changed his mind like Ronald Reagan did, which, by the way, nuts to that.
Yeah.
But he actually supported something in a Republican debate. Like, I could show you a video.
It works great in Canada. And yeah. It works great in France and stuff.
You know, but I mean, if you complain about it, you know, it's told like, well, you just don't get that people are angry. It's like, no, I understand people are angry. I'm angry too.
Romney is a
one second, Ben. This is the producer breaking in for just a second. I just want to let you know, CNN breaking news is now announcing that Carly Fiorina is ending her campaign for the presidency.
How nice of all these people to drop out
after
splitting the vote so that Trump won. That's sweet of them.
That's delightful.
Favor.
No, but you know, with Romney, you know, I was one of those voices during the primaries that said, "Okay, out of all of the candidates we have, do we have to choose the one who has the smallest teeth in opposing Obamacare?"
Yeah.
You know, and even as he started to run as the general in the general election, you know, we tried to stay quiet about it, but there were always rumblings behind the scene where we were like, well, you know, if we could actually talk about Obamacare, maybe that would make a difference. And so I agree with the criticism of the electability argument when it came to Romney.
Okay.
But I also agree that, you know, Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, but let's focus on Marco Rubio for a second. This is the only presidential candidate that's still in the running that was literally part of the 2010 sweeping election process. The Tea Party got them in. He was one of them. You know, he was at all of the conferences and at all the Tea Party rallies and everything else. And then he spent his political capital a little early and went all in on an immigration bill that wasn't going to be popular with the base. Okay, that's one thing. He's still just what we wanted on fiscal issues. He's still just what we wanted on all the other issues that we were all protesting about. All the other things that we said that we wanted him to do, he did. One thing we disagree with him on. And now our base, our frothing, angry, outraged base can't tolerate this guy and instead is going to have the entire 8-year process of the Tea Party revolution culminate with a billionaire jerkwad reality television star. Really? That's what this was all leading to? I wish I'd never gone.
That's how I feel. I feel like I was part of creating a monster that's now eating everything that we stood for from day one. And you know, you said something earlier, Donald Trump for socialized medicine. So I ask people when they say, you know, people that we've worked with and they're like, well, I'm supporting Trump now. You know, he's good. He says things, he's going to shake up the establishment. He might burn it all down. I'm like, whatever. How do you support this? And honestly, 7 out of 10 times I'll get, well, you know, when he builds the wall and we get rid of all the illegals, the socialized medicine won't hurt as bad because the illegals won't be taking advantage of the system. It's a legitimate thought process people have. I'm like, no, you learned nothing from the last 8 years. You've paid no attention and you're rationalizing for someone who's lying to you on a daily basis. And you're having to stretch to rationalize this stuff because that doesn't make any sense.
They're doing cartwheels, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, Ben brings up the immigration bill, and I can understand, like, if the immigration bill is that big of an issue for you, and say you support Ted Cruz over Marco Rubio, I can understand that. You know, everyone gets to choose their own issues. You know, you want to say Rubio flip-flop because, you know, he stood with, like, Chuck Schumer and changed his mind. That's fine if you're supporting Ted Cruz, but you're hanging, like, the Gang of Eight around Rubio. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you have Trump, who 4 years ago said the reason Romney lost because of how mean he was to Latino Americans, and I think even like a year and a half ago supported the Dream Act because he said Dreamers changed his mind, and yet we're supposed to believe that he's going to be strong against illegal immigration just because he yells the loudest about, you know, Mexicans and the wall.
Well, and how gullible do you have to be to believe that one of the most successful real estate people in the United States who have built skyscrapers all over the country has never employed illegal aliens? It is ridiculous. 90% of their construction was probably picked up at 7 o'clock in the morning in the parking lot of Home Depot, you know? And this is the other thing. When it comes to Marco Rubio and the Gang of Eight and all of that stuff, you know, he screwed up a little bit in how, not in, in his support originally, he could support whatever he wants. How you talk about why you changed your mind or what you changed your mind about is just as important as whatever you're proposing now. And his answer, in my opinion, which he alluded to in the last debate, his answer should have been, no, I never changed my mind on what I thought was right as far as this goes. What I changed my mind on was what I thought could be successful. And while I might prefer this other solution, I think that my conservative base and a good enough portion of the Democrat Party could support a bill that looks like the one that's being proposed now over the one that I originally proposed. Now, that's an honest answer. It doesn't mean he changed his mind. It means he reflected the political realities. But instead, he reacted to negative ads and made it worse for himself.
And he reacted to the rhetoric of Trump. I mean, everyone is doing this knee-jerk reaction of, oh, we didn't expect the cycle to be about this in this way, but how can I pander as much as possible to those voters, mm-hmm. but still keep my people happy? And that's a losing situation all the way around, like we're seeing. You can't do it.
They took our jobs. That's what they're all, I mean, like they all have to run on that now. They took our jobs.
Yeah. And so, okay, so looking forward to, like, you know, on everyone's going to visit Ben for the next 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I think they're staying in his house. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do we think it goes from here? Because, well, yeah, you could definitely see Rubio, Trump, and Cruz competing for as long as they can. Mm-hmm. Jeb seems to be in it. I don't think winning to him is winning the nomination. I think winning to him is beating Marco Rubio, just because, you know, how
all he wants is to beat Rubio in Florida.
I think that's really about it. And Kasich, I don't think, had a plan after New Hampshire. Does he just sit it out and wait until you get to Ohio?
He needs to talk to Jesus. They're on firsthand. They communicate regularly. So I think, you know, I think Kasich will also, I think Florida is the next big dropout. And I think Jeb wants to beat Rubio in Florida. And I think he's going to be surprised that he won't. I mean, you know, the reason that people cared about early states at all is because of momentum, not because it decides who's going to get the most delegates. You don't get the most delegates out of the first three states. The point is, who's moving forward? And when so far your campaign and the money you have spent has resulted in a sixth place and a fourth place showing, and probably not in the top four in South Carolina either, I can't imagine that he's going to get down to Florida and everybody's going to be anxious to vote for him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't understand Florida well enough. But I got to believe that the young guy who actually knows who 50 Cent is going to be more popular than, you know, another Bush.
I would agree with that.
In fact, can we start calling him the Burning Bush? Can we do that?
Hashtag Burning Bush.
Hashtag Burning Bush.
We're talking about Jeb, especially when you look at all the money that he's burning. Because
it's perfect. Yes, he's burning money. He's a burning bush. Oh, man. I'm a political genius.
You are.
I mean, the thing that doesn't – and I agree with Ben that that's probably the plan, but I'm looking at the calendar right now. Okay, sorry. So you got South Carolina and Nevada coming up. That can go anywhere, though. It'll probably go to Trump just because everything's terrible. And then March 1st, you have Super Tuesday. And it's mainly southern states, which wouldn't think would be fertile ground for Kasich or Bush.
I'm not seeing a lot of Kasich signs around here, I'll tell you that.
I mean, so they're really going to stick around to March 15th just to compete in Florida and Ohio?
These guys have obligations to their donors.
Did we not learn from Rudy Giuliani?
Look, they really truly believe that money buys elections. They really believe this. There was a $100 million super PAC supporting Jeb Bush. As far as they were concerned, this is all wrapped up. We're done. They don't consider momentum, social media, grassroots, any of that stuff. It's all just stuff you can buy. You can buy social media. You can buy grassroots. You can buy all that stuff. So in their minds, they're trying to get to these next markers to prove to donors that they're worth putting money into so that they can then buy the next state. I don't think it'll work. But I think that's what they think is going to happen. I think Jeb just thinks, all I got to do is get to Florida. I'll knock Rubio out. And the establishment donors are going to go, okay, Rubio's out. We've got to back Bush. And boom, I buy the election.
They need to literally start buying votes. that would be more cost efficient, paying the lawyers to defend them in the case than what they're doing right now.
But let me just say, I'd be happy to sell mine.
I'm good.
Yeah. Well, look, I support Marco Rubio, but if Trump or Cruz want to buy me like a new car or something, hey.
Hey, you know, I don't like Donald Trump at all. He's got a lot of money. All I'm saying is there is a certain number that if I achieve it, I no longer care what happens to the United States.
You guys sound like some people I know. I'm just saying. You're really similar to some conversations I've had with people recently.
All I'm saying is that I live in New York. My vote doesn't count anyway.
Right. All I'm saying is my address is no.
Well, then you live like you're South Carolina. You've got this, right? You understand it's a ground game state. And
yeah.
So we've gone from Iowa, which is its own animal, to New Hampshire, where I don't even know how to describe the process there, other than apparently if you hold massive rallies with a banner and say "Make America Great Again," people just show up to vote for you.
That's what they do.
Yeah. But South Carolina is different. And I will say, people should pay attention to the candidates that have been there for 18 months building a network, because I think there's a lot more people who've already had their mind made up in South Carolina than there are in Iowa or New Hampshire. And so perhaps, I mean, I don't think Donald Trump has a smooth sailing trip into South Carolina and does amazing because he hasn't built any kind of infrastructure.
Let me tell you something. In terms of ground game, I've seen Carson stuff. I've seen Cruz stuff. I've seen Ruby stuff. I've seen Carly Fiorina stuff. I have not seen one thing about Donald Trump down here.
I think they're going to coast in and pick something up. So
they're betting on rage. It's a deep South state, and I think that they're underestimating the fact that Spratt was my congressman for a long time, who was a 14-term Democrat. They don't just blindly elect Republicans down here, and they don't just blindly elect the loudest person. Who won South Carolina last time? Newt Gingrich. Because people were interested in what he had to say. There were plenty of loud candidates, but they chose Newt. I think the debate performance, as Marco just proved, debate performance is going to be huge. Marco can't screw up again.
Well, Marco's got great surrogates. He's got Tim Scott. He's got Trey Gowdy. He's got people that, at least the people that I talked to in South Carolina, that means something to them.
Yes.
People that they trust. So
Did Haley break for him? I don't even remember. Did he?
Not officially. Like, she kind of said nice things, but she didn't officially.
She needs to not break for him. She's not that popular in South Carolina. Correct. And if she comes out for him, it will solidify him to people in South Carolina as the establishment candidate. And South Carolina is already a state that battles that we have a lot of establishment just in our state legislature and in our state government. It's a brutal, brutal state.
But you're saying Lindsey Graham's not... Or the establishment? I don't know. I'm confused.
When Lindsey Graham can't be toppled, you know.
Ben, let me ask you a question real quick, Ben. How does the Rick Perry endorsement of Ted Cruz play in South Carolina?
I think that plays much better because South Carolina and Texas are very friendly with one another. Yep. And I think people see a lot of similar values between the two states. You know, sure, we've got Lindsey Graham. You've got John Cornyn.
Yeah.
So I think that will play better than even a Nikki Haley endorsement. I think Nikki would be, she may not be a detriment, but she'd probably be better off to endorse after.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
And my question is, and because you mentioned Trey Gowdy and Tim Scott, mm-hmm. who, you know, I mean, Gowdy endorsed before Iowa, but they both endorsed. I mean, like Scott's endorsement, they waited until just after the Iowa caucus. And, you know, fine, they both endorsed Rubio when it looked like that he was, you know, coasting to, like, you know, to possibly win New Hampshire and, like, you know, move strong in South Carolina. He finished fifth. Everyone's calling him done. How vocal surrogates are they going to, you know, be for the next, like, you know, week and a half if it looks like he's not going to win?
I don't know. Ben, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think part of the timing on Scott was so he could stump for Rubio ahead of New Hampshire in South Carolina. And so he could be out doing the buildup there before the official campaign moved all the way in.
I mean, everybody who was smart was working more on South Carolina than New Hampshire. And Cruz certainly was. I mean, he's, like I said, he spent $580,000. I can't remember what Rubio spent, but it, you know, it wasn't as much as Jeb, for instance.
It was right at a million.
It was in the millions. It was more. It was more important for Marco to do better in New Hampshire million. Than it was for Cruz.
It was 15 million, and we're at 25 minutes.
God, Rubio. Anyway, 15 million underdone by a debate performance. But the in South Carolina, yeah, I think building that infrastructure is going to be key. And there's a few congressmen that I haven't heard any endorsements come out of, and I wish that I had. Rick Perry was endorsed early on by Mick Mulvaney in 2012. And I would have thought that he would have weighed in by now, but he hasn't said anything. It would be great if he broke for Rubio or Cruz. But I think, getting Tim Scott early on was a good call. Avoiding Lindsey Graham like the plague, good call. Good call.
But I guess, here's the big question, and I know, you know, you both said, and there's logic behind this, that, you know, this isn't going to be easy for Trump because you need a ground game and you need to actually campaign. Since June 15th, 2015, we've been saying it's like, oh, well, you know, he's going to drop out for in a couple
don't
months.
Don't remind me.
And it's not going to work. And there's no way he could do well in Iowa. And there's no way he could do well in New Hampshire. And there's no way he could do well in the debates. And there's no way you could have meltdowns on Twitter and call people a pussy and, you know, say these things that he says. And there's no way he could survive. And he
we sound like the people. I mean, like, you know, we always get all over the establishment when it comes to cutting spending and stuff, because they're always like, this time we mean it, you know? And yet that's what we're doing right now. Yep. And we keep doing it. And so I did an interview earlier today and somebody said, you know, maybe after South Carolina, if he wins, we have to think of him as a viable candidate. My issue is not thinking of him. I do think he's a viable candidate. That's what disturbs me, is that I think that he could win. He is a threat. He's not a joke. He's a threat. And when it comes to predicting his demise and the ground game and stuff, never underestimate the power of throngs of racist idiots who somehow keep finding their way out into the public square to cast their idiotic, xenophobic, outraged, toothless jokes and or votes, jokes, whatever. And they're going to do it here too. And the only question is, how many of them are there going to be? Yes, he could win. He could win with no ground game. He could win just by going on TV and saying that Ted Cruz is a bigger pussy than he thought he was. And he might win. It's horrible.
Because, the way Ted Cruz has been going, he'll get called a pussy and say, well, like, I'm not going to argue with my friend Donald Trump because that's what the Washington cartel wants me to do. It's like, he can kind of hold you out.
Right.
Hey, John, on that note, we're about 27, 28 minutes into the show. Did you want to talk a little bit about the transition from Rubio and Cruz beginning to hit Trump, and specifically the ad today from Cruz?
Which ad came out today? Are we talking about the toddler one?
Yes, the toddler one.
Well, no, but I mean, here's the problem with that. I guess it's a question, a two-part question for both of you. One, should they have started defining Trump early on instead of ignoring him? And B, if they're going to do it, not do it half-assed, because, you know, Cruz will say he's my friend and I'm not going to the mainstream media and the Washington cartel and, you know, even though Rubio is the robot.
Yeah,
and then he'll release a negative ad, and then he'll say I'm not going to attack him, and then he'll do it half-assed. And Rubio, it's just sometimes he'll say it in debate, sometimes he won't. It's like, you know, is it too late to define Donald Trump? Or if they do it, people actually have to go in, like, you know, say if you have a PAC that mocks his slogan and doing stuff like that.
Well, the first thing is you went from one to B. I want to point that out. Okay. I said one, and then you said B. I just want to point that out. Okay, but
I usually do that as a joke. I just had a.
You just had a okay. Yeah. This is the thing. When it comes to defining Donald Trump, I think Cruz actually was pretty clever. A lot of people were giving him crap for laying off Trump, and they kept saying it was because he was trying to entice the worst elements of Trump's base. But what ultimately ended up happening was it became bigger news when Cruz did turn on Trump. And he also did it much closer to a day when people were actually going to be casting votes. So I think he created a bigger news story that damaged Trump more. And the result was he ended up winning Iowa. So I think he did make a good call. Where I think there's been a mistake is that Trump has successfully bullied almost everyone. Each candidate at one point or another came out, talked crap about him, got pummeled, and then backed off and said they don't want to talk about him anymore. And I think that the only person that hasn't has been Cruz. Jeb, a little bit, has been coming back with it. but they all have kind of reverted to playing nice with him. And I think it's because they don't want to be in constant defense mode, constantly defending, what do you think about Trump's remarks about blah, 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 which is all fine and dandy, except when he wins by twice as many votes in New Hampshire.
Yeah. And I was one of those guilty as charged with it from day one with Trump was like, get this guy out of here, and screaming at the top of my lungs, like, this is not what we want. This is completely going to ruin the cycle. And I was on Cruz pretty hard. After he didn't come back when Donald Trump said, Ted Cruz supports everything I say. And to me, that was the time Ted should have stood up and said, yeah, he's nice, but no, I don't support everything he says, and move on. You know, give some sort of comeback that, you know.
Contrast.
Knows? Yeah, something different. You know, give me an example of where we feel differently on a topic. But he's an anomaly. I can't figure it out. I can't figure out why people that I spent 8 years doing crazy work beside in all these states have told me, yeah, it's all over. I support Trump. And, you know, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And well, I guess to wrap up, since I think we're all at a point where we're going to start drinking before it's 4 o'clock, and yeah. Actually, you know, 2 out of 3 of us work from home, so we probably have been drinking since Friday.
What's all this start drinking stuff?
I got to catch up.
Whitney, what's new? What's going on? What's the haps with the Bill of Rights Institute?
So I don't know if you guys know anything about us, but we actually do education about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and we work with teachers to make sure that kids, when they are, whether they're at a charter school, private school, public school, homeschooled, they get an actual education in the founding principles, in what their freedoms are and why they're important. So we have an online debate going on right now. I just had 23,000 kids enter an essay contest about their freedom of speech. And so we're doing whatever we can to engage people before they're voters with what issues are important, so that when they get out there, maybe they're a little more engaged with the process. And
did you let the kids know that Trump single-handedly saved the freedom
saved
of
it.
Speech?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, you know, I decided not to include that in the essay packet, but I'm sure some of them came to that when
they
heard it
they
the end of the day. They were like, whoa, man,
thank
without
God,
this guy.
To. Yeah.
I shot a video of myself actually head desking that I did once as a joke. I was not expecting it to be reposting it as much as I have been.
Yeah.
But Ben, what's going on? What's the new, what's the haps with how creative? And part B to my two-part question is Sarah Smith really awesome or awesomely awesome?
Really, really indispensably awesome. That would be how I describe it. Okay. We
big Sarah fans.
She went, you know,
but thumbs up for
she had the Felicia move out recently.
Yeah.
And that was hard for me. So you know, I mean she had surgery and all that, but like I was clearly the one that suffered by not having her around. So howcreativegroup.com, where we make every great video you've ever seen. And I'm also at Red State, where I write along with your producer, who shall, I guess, remain nameless. And can I name him, or is he like the secret guiding hand?
Here's the problem: the rule. Aaron didn't want to be named on the show, so we can't actually say Aaron's name during the show.
Don't say Aaron
as the mystery producer.
Okay, so don't say Aaron's name. Okay.
Don't say Aaron's name.
All right, and I won't say Aaron then. But writing at Red State, and then of course I'm on Twitter making trouble and trying to upset Trumpkins.
Okay, so this has been a very cathartic episode of the
yes.
podcast. You can find us on everyjoe.com, hashtag EJPC. For Ben, for Whitney, for our producer Aaron, whose name we're not supposed to be saying, this has been another episode of the Every Joe podcast, which I just said. We'll see you next week. We'll be talking about guns, something more enjoyable to talk about than Donald Trump.
Yes, gun death.
Peace.
Later. All right, you guys are clear.